Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Nervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. Yang Hervis. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big basketball show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. It's time to get back into the basketball groove as we resume our NBA report with our good friend Chris in Georgia. And it shall be a good time tonight. We'll count down to some additional shows coming up this month. Next week is a big week for college basketball. We're going to do the NCAA selection show, which apparently we're going to do a better job of that than TBS. And they're wacky format. A little weird. More details on that next week. Then we'll do our full tournament preview with Chris in Syracuse on a separate show. And we'll do another NBA report. So we got a busy week next week here in the city. And then after that, we're going to be pretty close to the WrestleMania podcast preview. And that'll be towards the end of the month, maybe the 1st of April. And also this month, we are going to look at the MLB preview with our good friends Jerry and Ari. So it's a really busy month in the city. Just as much madness as the madness of college basketball. But first, some business. Additional business. Yes. We must continue our look at, recap the Oscars because that just took place on Sunday, and we spent a couple hours previewing it with ACQ and Andy in Seattle, so let's give you a recap of what happened in the ceremony. Well, we start with Best Picture, and the winner of that was Shape of Water. Best Actor goes to Gary Oldman for Darkest Hour. Huge favorite. That was pretty clear winner there. Best Actress, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Best Supporting Actor goes to Sam Rockwell, same movie. Best Supporting Actress, Allison Janney and I, Tonya. Best Director, Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water. Best Writing for an Adapted Screenplay, Call Me By Your Name, adapted by James Ivory. And for the Best Original Screenplay, Get Out, written by Jordan Peele. Best Original Song goes to Remember Me from the animated film Coco. Best Original Music Score is from The Shape of Water, composed by Alexandra Desplat. And the Best Foreign Language Film, A Fantastic Woman. Best Documentary Feature, Icarus. And the Best Animated Feature Film goes to the aforementioned Coco. Big year for Coco. Big year for Shape of Water. Big year for Three Billboards and a lot of chalk in the Oscars this time around. So congratulations to all the winners. Not a lot of surprises this time around when it comes to what happened on Oscar Sunday. So let's now get back to business with the NBA. And in the National Basketball Association, teams are red hot. And and as we see the action heating up on the court, we're also seeing the action heating up on the level below the NBA with guys coming out of high school. It sounds like Adam Silver has a plan to try to get the best players in the best optimal position to be the very best. No, Adam Silver is trying to set up a system that can give the NBA players the best of both worlds. Let's jump it. Report for March 6th. The NBA has announced a plan to eliminate the one-and-done rule by way of starting relationships with players in high school and enhancing the G League. The plan is to have the G League as an alternative option for developing players, you know, in addition to college basketball. It may be a good situation that may even out some of the discrepancies we are seeing now with the one-and-done era over in college basketball. Up next in the news, the Lakers' Brandon Ingram is out 1 week due to a groin strain. Lakers' great Kobe Bryant won an Oscar for Best Animated Short Feature entitled Dear Basketball on Sunday. Now let's get to the teams that are on a roll. The Blazers are on a 7-game win streak. The Pelicans are on an 8-game win streak. And the Rockets are on a 15-game winning streak. Amazing action out of the NBA right now as we begin our next report. So let's bring back our friend Chris in Georgia. Chris, good to have you back. How's it going tonight?
Great, Dave. How are you?
Doing well. And thank you for the updates via messaging about the Toronto game against the Atlanta Hawks. And I think we know both teams pretty well. I definitely was surprised that the Hawks are giving Toronto such a hard time tonight. But it appears that Toronto's starting to get a handle on it.
Yeah, they're up. They're up pretty well right now. It's 104-87 with just about a minute left. So Toronto's got this wrapped up, but the Hawks kept it close for about 3.5 quarters. So good job by them. I'm a tankathon skeptic. I mean, especially when it comes to the Hawks, is that I just flat out think that they just play hard no matter what the circumstances, and they're clearly not trying to lose. It's exciting. It's good to see them give them a tough time. And the Raptors, of course, have the best home record in the NBA. So I didn't think Atlanta was going to pull it off, but it was fun to watch for a few quarters.
Yeah, they showed some heart tonight, and I did undersell the Raptors tonight. I thought that, gosh, they do seem to have a tough time with some of these bad teams, or even good teams, obviously, like Milwaukee. But I think I was just jumping the gun on that because clearly they got in the run. And I saw a similar situation last night with Cleveland when they were playing Detroit. And I said, man, Cleveland's clearly better than Detroit. Why are they hanging around with these guys? And then in the third and fourth quarter, they just really pulled away pretty handily. So it happens. I mean, basketball has ups and downs, and I think Toronto is no different. So we both are pretty solid on them. So I think I may have just been a little too, I may have been a little bit too scared in the beginning. Anyway, back to basketball. There's a lot going on. I mean, all these hot teams, I can't get over it. I mean, we saw the Blazers have a big comeback. They were down by 11 points with 5 minutes to go in Los Angeles, and they came back. Damian Lillard was the reason they came back. I mean, he was unstoppable in that fourth quarter. He had a three-pointer. You may have seen it in the highlights, where he was at least 35 feet away from the basket. I mean, once you lock that down, you're on a roll. Like, there's just no stopping that. I mean, we've seen it with many players, and it's really something. So that's one. Pelicans on an 8-game winning streak, just showing you just how great Anthony Davis really is. I mean, can you imagine losing Boogie Cousins, not having a great deep bench, at least offensively, and then still getting on an 8-game winning streak and keeping your team alive for the playoffs? I mean, that really says a lot about Davis. And Celtics on a roll, crushed the Bulls on Monday. Rockets with 15. And that really just snuck under me because I'm like, well, the Rockets are doing well. I didn't realize they're 15. 15 games in a row. Now, they are playing the Thunder tonight. And that's on TNT if you're... it's on TNT for you, Chris. I guess the people listening already saw it. But it's on TNT as we do the podcast. And Rockets have an early lead at the half. So, a lot of teams are pretty hot. I mean, I think this is where you want to be. It's about the time where teams start to... separate themselves and they make a run. You got to make a move if you're going to be a playoff team. So comment, which one do you want to start with these hot teams?
Probably the Rockets. I mean, I'm just, 15 in a row. I mean, they're trying to set the longest winning streak for the season. I believe the Celtics won 16 in a row, if I'm not mistaken. Was it 17? I can't remember, but they're trying to eclipse that. I don't know if you saw it, but over the weekend they played Boston, and that was a very good game, very close, hard fought game. Rockets made a couple of really good defensive plays down the stretch to pull it out and seal the win. But very exciting. The Celtics and Rockets have played both games this year, and they've both come down to the wire, and they ended up splitting the series. The home team won both games, and so you know, very fun team to watch. I have tremendous respect for what Heason's done this year, and you know, it's not your typical D'Antoni team, because, like I said, they can play some defense when they need to, and it's not you know, this is not you know, Phoenix circa 2008 or whatever. This is a good team. It's pretty well rounded. They have some good defense players. They're very deep, Dave. They're a very deep team.
Yeah.
And so they're exciting. Yeah, I just flipped over to the Rockets game just now, because the Nets, not Nets, the Hawks game's over. So, yeah, I mean, did you have some thoughts about the Rockets, Dave?
Well, I think it's similar to things I've said in past shows, where I think this is the best Rockets team in the James Harden era so far, up to date. It has to be. Like, I think, like you said, their defense is actually pretty good. And guys are not buying it, and they have no reason to, because we've seen James Harden's playoff history. But at least with what we see so far, this is a much better team than those past teams. My issue is that D'Antoni doesn't really emphasize defense when it matters. So everyone's going to be a little skeptical on them once they start the playoffs. But I do think that in terms of personnel, this is the best I've ever seen in with these guys. Like, I think Chris Paul contributes to that, because he's a decent defender. I certainly we've mentioned, seen it with Capella. We've seen it. You mentioned Anderson, I think. Yeah, that's another good one. It's a good team. I think it's not. They do chuck too many threes, I think, but that's just D'Antoni. Like, you're not going to get away from that. So I think the question is, if they shut down the three-pointer, are they still going to be an effective team in the postseason, in the playoffs? And I think they will be. It's just going to be really interesting once they start playing the tops of the tops. And in this case, that means Golden State. It also means Portland. Unbelievably, they're the 3 seed right now with all these wins they've had in a row, including one against Golden State and one against Utah. And the one against the Lakers last night, although the Lakers are not as good as the other two teams. That is really impressive. I do think they're... You said to me this morning that you see them as a bit of a weird team, and I do too. And the reason I think they're weird is because we know they have two really great players, like McCollum and Lillard. I mean, they're fantastic players. And when they get on a roll, I mean, it's really something to see. But I do get the sense that this is really what they need to happen to win a game, which means the depth isn't really as good. I know that Houston's way more deep than them. I think even my Lakers have more depth than those guys, personally. Their defense is terrific, for the most part. I'll look at the defensive ratings, but I tend to think of them as a decent defense. I just don't know where their contributions are going to come if those two guys are not having a great night. But it's kind of a chicken and egg scenario. So I really would like to get your feeling for Portland, too, because I don't know where to put them. I don't think they're actually a three-seeded team. They just happen to have it right now because everything's so close in the Western Conference. Like, 3-10 is, like, really close. Like, maybe 3 or 4 games separating them. But it is certainly it can be a great team when they're rolling. So let me see what you have to say. I mean, what do you think about the Blazers? Do you think that they might have some needs themselves? Or are they doing... I mean, they are doing great. I don't want to take anything away from them, but let me get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you know, what you're saying about the Western Conference, because you obviously have the two elite teams at the top. You have Houston and Golden State, and then the 3 through 8 seeds are separated by 2.5 games. So Portland's 12 games back of Houston in the West, and number 8 seed Denver is 14.5. So it's going to be pretty volatile. You know, if you ask me, it's just, there's going to be a lot of moving around, a lot of reshuffling. Portland just kind of took me by surprise. And, you know, that 7-game win streak catapulted them, you know, into the 3 seed. And, yeah, we'll see. You know, what's interesting about that win streak, the 7-game win streak, is just the teams that they beat, because they really only had 2 cupcakes. They had back-to-back games, not back-to-back nights, but back-to-back games against the Suns and Kings, which is about as bad as it gets. But then they also they kicked off the winning streak with a win against the Warriors. Then they won at Utah. Then the Kings and Suns, and then the Timberwolves, Oklahoma City, and the Lakers last night. So really two cupcakes in that span, and a few nice wins in there. When you know, you include the Lakers, Thunder, Golden State, and Utah. So and the T-Wolves also. So yeah, some really solid wins in there. It's funny. The Trailblazers are one of the teams I've probably seen the least for whatever reason. That they might have the best backcourt in the league right now with McCollum and Dame Lillard, who's just, you know, last night was just on another level. What did he end up with, 41 points or something like that?
Yeah, it was over 40.
Yeah.
It was insane. That's really good. He did it almost all of it in the fourth quarter. Like, he had 18 at halftime. So he really turned it on when the game got very, very important.
Yeah, he made some beautiful moves. Like, he's almost unguardable in a way, because you can't play him too tight, because he'll blow right by you. And if you play off of him, he'll take a little step back and just drain the three. Like you said, he hit some mammoth shots last night. So yeah, they're a fun team. I mean, I'm a little biased just because I think like Evan Turner is a guy who gets major minutes from them. And it's a really strange team. Like Nurkic, he's a good player. Outside of, the backcourt's outstanding. I don't see, I don't know. I'll have to look at the rest of their schedule, because it seems like, there's going to be a lottery shuffling. And as I look at it, Portland has, in terms of strength of schedule remaining, they have the sixth toughest schedule. Their remaining opponents have a 543 win percentage. So, we'll see. I mean, they're certainly going to be testing this last 18 games now. Only 18 games left, Dave, before the end of the season. So we'll see. But it's been a nice run, and they've done a nice job, and you got to give them credit. This was a team that was not in the playoffs last year. So
right. It does seem like they just see what do you think it would take for the Blazers to be a serious team? Because I don't know if I consider them a serious team, because they have two tremendous players, no doubt, but you pretty much laid it out. Like, they don't have a lot after that. I mean, there's a couple of nice guys, but I just feel like, who's going to be that go-to defender? Who's going to be that go-to rebounder? Who's going to be the guy to set up the shot? Who can be the spot shooter? Like, I don't know if anybody's really stepped up consistently. I mean, we did see that as good as Lillard was, like, he was accounting for like 80% of the points in the fourth quarter from the Blazers' point of view. So, when you're on, that's great, but you're not going to be on for seven games in a row. So, what could they do? Like, they can't do it this year, right? But what kind of players do you think would really, really maximize a team like this?
Hard to say. I mean, I think like that, as far as rebounding, I think they're pretty well covered with the
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Nurkic.
That's a good
yeah,
point.
I mean, those two guys up front, like, they can grab a bunch of boards. I just think they need that third, like, legitimate scorer. And it's not Evan Turner. Although I like a lot of things Turner brings to the team, just because he's a small forward, but he plays kind of like a little bit of a point forward. And he did a lot with the Celtics, where he'd handle the ball and distribute. And he did a nice job in that role. It'll be interesting to see the development of Zach Collins, because I really liked him coming out of Gonzaga. And, he was like a nice low post player. I believe he was a one and done. I think he was a freshman last year on the team that actually went to the national championship game and lost. And so I want to see his development. I mean, he's just a kid, but I really, if he can make a leap, that, maybe he's the player, because I thought he was sort of a steal. I can't remember what number they picked, but it was sort of a later lottery pick. So I believe it was in the teens, but I'll have to double check that. So don't take my word for it. But that's a guy I'd be interested to see if he can make the leap in the next few years.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. And meanwhile, we'll keep an eye on the Pelicans, too, soaring in the last 2 weeks, 8 games in a row. This one definitely was a surprise when I found out about it because I hadn't seen him in a while, you know, and you see so many games, you see him with so many scores, and then all of a sudden you look at the standings, 8 in a row. I'm like, wow, now this is really something considering that, you know, the best assets at this point are Davis, tremendous player. And after that, you're like, well, okay, then a couple of other guys and then old Rajon Rondo and, you know, that sort of, those kind of players. So let me get your feel on that. I mean, I don't think we're either of us are thinking that they're going to make a finals run, but what has led them to this run so far, other than Davis? Well, no, actually, Davis has led them to the run. I mean, I guess there's... I answered my own question, but it really is something. Like, I think it says a lot about Davis that he's willing to do that. They could have packed it in, and they didn't. Yeah. And I just think that's fantastic. So, I mean, that's good on them. I think, I don't know how much of this you credit to Alvin Gentry. He's been all over the league, but he can get teams on runs. Like, he does seem to do that in a short term, at least. So, I honestly have no idea how good a coach he is because he has been on every team. He would make them good for like a year or two. And then he would just, by the time he gets fired, like they'd be completely a mess. So, but overall, it's entertaining. And I think if you're a Pelicans fan, you're happy because they are, because they're relevant. And I don't think they're going to make the finals, but making the playoffs for what they've been through, I think it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, definitely. I think Mirotić has been a nice boost for them. Just looking at his game logs, he's had some really nice games, and you know that he's kind of been a little bit of a missing piece because they needed that sort of wing, a guy who could shoot from the outside. Although the two bigs really could too. It's a shame, Dave, just because what might have been if Boogie had stayed healthy, you know, and this team just like firing on all cylinders right now. Interesting thing about this streak, three of the 8 games that they won were in overtime, one in double overtime against the Mets, and then one against the Heat at home, and then one at Milwaukee. So 3 overtime wins, which is kind of unbelievable if you think about it in a span of 8 games. And again, you know, they had some nice wins. They beat San Antonio, Milwaukee, the Lakers, and, So, nice job out of them. The Brow has done a great job. I mean, he's on another level. He's just showing why he's one of the premier players in the NBA right now.
Yeah, that's awesome, you know? And I would have definitely, you know, I think it's funny because we were both really getting into the Pelicans when both he and Boogie were doing their thing. But to see them this competent without Boogie is still pretty awesome. Like you said, this would have been really interesting. It would have been a very different type of team too, because I know everyone's like saying, "Hey, it's a guard league now," but two huge guys like that controlling the paint, making it happen on the offensive end, passing the ball, they really can do a lot of different things. Like it was fun to see two of those guys. It kind of reminds you of the old Spurs with Robinson and Duncan. And that's just a recent example. And there are a lot of guys. I think you brought up a Sampson and Olajuwon back in the 80s. So
yeah.
That's a great example, you know. And so it's an interesting case. Definitely an interesting case. Now, let's see. On the Celtics, they were struggling, no doubt. But I think, as you mentioned to me off air, Marcus Smart was glue. Like, he was the glue. Like, I think, you know, I didn't give him enough credit, but once he came back, it looks like the Celtics are starting to get back together. They're putting together some W's, more consistency on the court, better offense, and certainly showed last night in Chicago.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Marcus Smart is one of those guys that what he does really doesn't show up in the box score. Unless you look at plus minus, because he always seems to be like, you know, on the, you know, big time on the plus side, at the end of games. But you know, he doesn't fill up the box score. But man, he is a pesky defensive player, underrated passer. I've always said he's an excellent passer, and it kind of goes unnoticed. The biggest weakness in his game is just he's an awful shooter. I mean, there's just no way around it. He's a terrible three-point shooter. He penetrates and he puts his shoulder down and he gets to the basket, he misses layups. I mean, he is just not a good shooter in any regard. But everything else is great, and he's such a good defensive player. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Celtics have, what are they, 5-1 since the All-Star break, I think? 5-1. The one loss was at Houston, which they lost, by 3 points. And also they've just been blowing teams out. I mean, they beat Charlotte by almost 30, and last night against the Bulls. I mean, they kind of let off the foot off the gas a little bit, but they blew them out. Memphis, I mean, granted, these are bad teams, but, you know, the Celtics weren't doing this before. So it's exciting to see. The other thing, too, is Greg Monroe has really kind of seems like in the last few games, he's like turned it around a little bit, and he's done a nice job and starting to fit in and just be that piece that they need off the bench. So I think, in my opinion, the two things that have happened is, you know, they got Marcus Smart back, and then they've got Monroe integrated, and the bench has really started to play well, and it's starting to look like maybe it's a little bit of a strength, because you got Tice, who is an excellent rookie, and Smart, and Monroe, you know, really coming alive, and then of course, the guard from Louisville. Why am I drawing a blank?
Hey, which guard are you talking about?
Terry Rozier. I'm sorry.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Rozier. That's right.
Yeah, Terry Rozier has been really solid, even in Smart's absence when he started playing more minutes, and it's just shown to be a capable offensive player. They're starting to, they hit that skid. Like, you know, like you said, it's a long season, and teams have their ups and downs, and even the good teams. But they're looking like a different team since the All-Star break, for sure. And I think the bench is the biggest part of that.
Yeah, and I remember that was the big thing about the Celtics. They were getting a lot of production from the young guys early in the season, and then that kind of gave way. And now they're starting to get it back. And I think that's part of the growing process with a team like that. I mean, certainly I saw that with the Lakers. You see it with a lot of teams, really. I mean, every young team's going to go through that. But that's important. It's important that they got their glue back, and that helped. Yeah, I was curious about what you thought about Monroe, because the guys in the Ringer do not like him. I think the thing with the Ringer is these guys do not really either. They don't seem to have much of an opinion of guys who can play big. They want guys that can move in space and whatever. But, if you get a traditional guy that can play big, you know, a big man that actually plays like a big man, there are two guys like that in the Clippers. There's Harrell and there's Jordan. You know, it's a different game. And so that's always been, I think they tend to have a little bias against that. So if a guy's not doing, you know, if a guy's not playing spacing and all that, maybe they're not so high on him. So I wondered whether you felt the same way or whether you felt a little differently overall with Monroe. He's picked it up, as you mentioned. Do you think that he benefits the Celtics long term or maybe medium term?
Well, he's just a one year pickup for them.
So, oh, okay, so this is just the means to an end then? Like kind of like with Isaiah, like it'll just kind of have him for the season and then just move on?
Probably. Probably. I don't know. I mean, it'll, you know, I don't know what the market will be like for him. I mean, you know, depending on how he plays down the stretch, I'm sure the Celtics would love to have him as a bench piece. I suspect, I don't know this, but I suspect he probably does want to start somewhere. I don't think he's that kind of player anymore, Dave, but he's a bench player. He's a role player at this point in his career. And he's not even that old. I think, how old is Greg Monroe? I don't even think he's 30. I'll have to double check that.
He probably looks older than he is. He's not that old, though. You're right.
He is 27. Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's not that old. I mean, he feels like he's been around forever. Mm-hmm. With the Pistons and the Bucks and the Phoenix and now and the Celtics. But he has his limitations. He's not a good pick and roll defender. His instincts are bad in that scenario. But he still can score and he can still get some rebounds and really that's all they're asking for him for right now. You know, and right. the biggest issue on that second team was scoring. Tice actually is a really good defender, I think, and a pretty good rebounder. So he kind of fits the bill. I mean, it's a nice little combo they got going up if those two guys are on the floor. I don't know if I heard that with the Ringer. Was it KOC? Was it Simmons? Who wasn't that high?
I was trying to think. Well, I think Simmons. Yeah, I do think Simmons is a big leader of that bandwagon of the I'm not a fan of Greg Monroe scenario. So. Yeah, I don't remember what KOC said, but Simmons certainly was one of the ones leading the leading the Monroe is a bad fit chance. So I believe that is the source of the of that storyline.
Very nice.
Well, it is what it is. Yeah.
So the other thing I meant to bring up was just with regard to that Houston game was just the fact that. Kyrie's kind of in their go-to scorer, and he was bad that night. He was 6 for 17 or something from the floor.
Oh.
He was awful.
Yeah.
And they were in that game, which was pretty impressive. He and Horford were really not good in that game, and the Celtics lost by 3. So, to me, that kind of tells a story. If you're looking for the silver lining as a Celtics fan, that's it right there. Is that they're two highest paid players on the team, outside of Hayward, who didn't play obviously, were bad, and they still almost won it, and they were winning with under 5 minutes, and so a little bit of a silver lining there against the team with the best record in basketball on their home court. So.
Yeah, it's a tribute to their defense. I think their defense continues to be very, very productive. According to the chart, they have the best defensive rating in the NBA at 101.3. Now, to those unfamiliar, defensive rating means... Wait. I was trying to get the feeling for what it meant. I think it meant, like, number of possessions or something. No, that's offensive efficiency, excuse me. So, I guess
like
that...
Like the defensive rating?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So defensive efficiency.
Yeah, defensive rating is the number of points per 100 possessions.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's pretty good. I mean, 101.3 per 100 possessions is pretty good. And I think teams are trying to get in more possessions per game. That's a movement I like. I think that's pretty good. I don't think the big man's dead yet. We saw Embiid play really well. I mentioned Harrell and Jordan. We talked about Anthony Davis a while ago. You know, still a chance. We've seen Porzingis before he got hurt. He looked pretty good. I'm not quitting on the big man immediately at the moment. And Randle, even though he's more undersized than the other guys, Julius Randle has been playing like a beast. He has been so good on both ends of the floor, really. I mean, you just see him around the basket all the time. I mean, he's really, really picked it up, so... I think the big man still got a chance in this game.
Definitely, absolutely. I mean, it's the game's evolved though because you're seeing another facet where they have to be able to. I mean, they don't have to, but the best big man can play inside and outside. And you see how at AD, I mean, you can't leave him open from behind the three because he's going to, you know, he's going to drill it. And he can eat you up on the inside. So those kind of players are worth their weight in gold. But the old school, you know, back to the basket center who doesn't leave the post, that kind of player is really kind of limited at this point. And, it's sad, but in my opinion, the game is a lot better right now than it's ever been. And a lot of that has to do with the way it's played.
Well, I will add this. I think players today are more versatile than they used to be, which I actually like. I think it goes back to the way they played basketball in the 70s. Guys, you know, didn't necessarily have specialized roles. It's like, well, you're the guy that just does the post-up moves, and you're the guy that just spots up and takes the three. You have that, yeah, but you have a lot of guys that can really do a lot of different things. You have power forwards playing point guard, you have point guards trying to do post-up moves, you know what I mean, like, it's just there is no really set position with set roles. The roles can be with anybody, and I think some guys can do any of a number of things. They can pass, they can run the floor, they can shoot free throws. I mean, they're versatile. I love it. I think the movement to this is kind of cool because guys can be good in many different categories, and that only says good things to me as the NBA goes.
Could not agree more, Dave. I mean, you see it all over the league. You know, like, you look at a team, I'm watching Houston right now, Chris Paul and James Harden in the backcourt. I mean, that might not have happened 20 years ago, you know, or even 10 years ago for that matter. You know, same thing with Portland, as we were talking about before, McCollum and Dame. I mean, people would look at them like, oh, they kind of play the same position, so we don't want them on the floor at the same time. I mean, when I was growing up, like, you know, you said a guy was a tweener. That was a bad word. And it's like, why? I mean, you know, this guy has skills. I mean, he doesn't fit the mold of a, you know, we used to look at the NBA with, or basketball, just, is he a one, a two, a three, a four, or a five? And now it's just like, well, he's either, you know, a guard or a wing or a big, and that makes a lot of sense to me. It's an easy word to categorize. It's more useful, and it doesn't restrict you. And I totally agree with what you just said. I mean, like Marcus Smart is another example. Like, you know, we try to find faults in what players can't do, and you miss what they really excel at. And Smart is a perfect example of that. Wow, Chris Paul just hit about a 40-footer.
That was impressive, huh?
Oh, my goodness. I totally agree. It's great. It's a good way to, I think teams used to make mistakes based on those categories, you know, like, oh, well, we have a two, so we don't want to draft another two. And it's just like, man, just get the best players you can and figure out where you're going to play them later, you know?
Yeah. I love that. You know, that could have kept the Lakers from getting Lonzo Ball. You know, maybe they're like, well, we don't really need another point guard. We've got D'Angelo. We should go with a better rebounder. We kind of need a wingman. So why don't we get Josh Jackson? That would have been a disaster, as it turns out. I mean, at least as far as this year is going, Lonzo's been nice. I think his three-point shooting has improved a lot since that injury. Maybe he was working on it. So that's just an example, anyway, of that. Now, before we get to the G League plan, I want to get into the underperforming teams, because I think this could covered a little less. I did see the jump today while I was on lunch. I was at Jersey Mike's watching the jump. At the Jersey Mike's, and they, you're gonna love this.
Are they a sponsor now, Dave?
Are they a sponsor? I wish. Oh, Jersey Mike's sponsor the jump. Oh, that'd be fun. Or a sponsor of this show. I wish. Oh man.
Yeah. I thought we got a little plug in there.
I know. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I was hungry. I just wanted the sandwich, but I ended up enjoying that too. I seemed to come around there at the same time because I'm like, oh yeah, the jump's on, and then you get my sandwich and. So it's always fun. But I watch it without the sound, so I'm really only going by the giant headlines they have at the bottom of the screen. So you'll get a kick out of this. The headline today was do the Pistons need to make the Pistons need to make the playoffs to save Stan Van Gundy's job? And like, why is there a question mark? That should have an exclamation point. That's obvious. I think the only way he makes it the next year is if the Pistons make the playoffs. So I did find that humorous that they positioned it as a question because everybody knows the answer is yes.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Is it Rachel Nichols that does that show?
Yeah.
I don't watch a ton of ESPN, I got to admit.
Yeah.
That is an odd one. I would think he's got the hottest of hot seats right now.
Oh, I know.
Which is unfortunate because I think, I think he's actually like a pretty good coach. I just think he's probably stretched thin, wearing the player personnel hat as well as coaching. But, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs at this point.
Nope.
And B, I don't think he's going to be working there any longer.
Yeah, it seemed pretty
evident.
And
I don't think it's going to be a case like Doc where they they just take away the general manager role. I think they're going to go for, fresh start there. I have no idea who they'll be interested in, but I don't think he's going to be around much longer.
It looks like they are now 4.5 games behind the Heat for that eighth spot. 17 and that's not going to happen.
They have an easy schedule, though, Dave. That's the thing. They have fourth easiest schedule by win percentage.
Let me take a look at that.
18 games. Yeah.
I'll dig into that. Let's see if how many of these they can win. Now, Detroit. I wrote Detroit Pistons. Okay, there we go. Losing the Cavs is not a big deal. I mean, they're good, so that's not a big deal. Raptors tomorrow, though. It is tomorrow. Oh, well, that's going to be tough for Toronto because that's the back-to-back scenario for them. So that might be a little tricky for the Raptors, but they should win. They really should. I mean, we both have seen the Pistons play. I mean, it's just guys trying to hoist the ball at the basket for a dunk and not a lot of organization. We already talked about that. But let's go into the other games.
Yes, Detroit's two of their last 11. They've won two of their last 11.
That's pretty bad.
That's where they're just... Most
and now they're going to owe Blake Griffin $40 million a year. I mean, Jerry West had a right idea. I mean, I know they signed him to the contract too, but they picked it up on it. They're like, you know what? This isn't going to work. And it's kind of interesting to make that conclusion within the season of the first year of his contract. It is it's really wild. But anyway, let's get into
I can't remember anything like that happening before. I don't remember signing a guy to a huge contract and then trading him at the deadline that same year. Maybe there's an instance of it, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, and people were saying that he's been tough to take inside the... I don't know. I mean, maybe that's true or not. I don't really know. I don't have a real feel for that. But definitely a first for me. So... you feel bad for him from the standpoint of him having to live in Detroit for the next 5 years or 3 years or whenever. But for the moment, this is the remaining schedule. They got the Bulls, so okay, they'll win that one. Jazz on the road, no. Nuggets on the road, no. Blazers on the road, no. Man, that's bad. So they could lose four to the next five. But after that, then you've got the Kings, you've got the Suns. And you get the Rockets. That's not easy. But you get the Bulls again, Lakers, Wizards, the Knicks, the Nets, the 76ers. Yeah. Is that going to be a winnable game? Maybe. I don't know.
It's going to be tough. No, Sixers.
Yeah, probably not.
Awesome right now.
Yeah, but after that, you got the Mavericks and the Grizzlies. They have to literally.
Yeah, Oh, sorry.
Well, all I was going to say is that they have to sweep the table with all the bad teams. Like, they have to win all of these. They can't give up any of these games with teams that are with a lesser record. So they need to win every one of those. Because they're going to play some good teams, too, in the middle of these next couple weeks. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, they play... I mean, their sixth worst opponents are the Bulls, Nets, Kings, Mavs, Suns, and Grizzlies, who I think are, if I'm not mistaken, those are the six worst teams in basketball by record. Oh, they don't have the Hawks. So I think it's six of the seven worst teams by record right now. So that's a nice little schedule. But like you said, they have to win every single one of those. And it's just, I mean, 4.5 games with 18 to play, that's impossible. I mean, you got to go on a serious run, even against this crummy schedule they have left. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't. It's
Miami has an easy schedule too. They have just slightly tougher opponents than Detroit. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm, you know, even and for all we've said about Miami, I mean, I think they're good enough to beat some of those bad teams the rest of the way too. So they'll probably make it in. I mean, our discussion last week just reminded me of how little I think of the 8-seed format. I'm like, really? The Heat or the Pistons could make the playoffs this year. I'm like, that's completely useless. There's no reason for either of those teams to be in the show. None. I heard
Dave, if the Lakers were in the East, would they would be a playoff team, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think so. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. Not only are they better, but they can play all these crummy teams in the middle of all of their schedule more frequently. Yeah. I'm like, you put the two together, I mean, they're probably a 5-seed in the Eastern Conference right now.
Maybe. I definitely been in a playoff, so yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, with 8 seeds, yes. Oh, no question. I mean, they may even have a chance to make the, I mean, not likely, but they might even have a shot at it in the West right now as it stands. But I still don't like the idea of there being 8 seeds. I just, you know, we've dealt with it basically for our entire lives, for the most part. We went over the whole thing last week of why I think it's too many teams. And look, in the West, it's a little better because you've got Utah making a run, and that's actually a good team. Clippers, are actually a good team. They seem to be a better team after these trades. It's weird, but I actually think they're playing better ball without those two superstars. It's the strangest thing, but I just think they're more cohesive. That's why they seem to fit better or something like that.
You saw them in person, though, so you got a firsthand look at the new look Clippers. I mean, it's been a few weeks, obviously, but Tobias Harris and I don't know. Boban didn't play.
I mean, I was very disappointed. I really wanted to see him play. Like, he had a great game in Denver, and I mean, but nevertheless, a great privilege to watch them on Sunday against the Nets while everybody was dabbling over the Oscars. I had a good time with it. Good game. That game went down the end.
It was funny because I mean, it sounds like you hadn't been to an NBA game in a good while. I was actually at a competitive game, but it was the Hawks against the Suns. Came down to the last shot. Devin Booker missed a shot, and Nets won. Hawks won by one over the Suns. And then later that day, you went to Clippers. But who did they play? I forget.
Nets. Yeah, Brooklyn.
Clippers Nets. You went to And that turned out to be a good game because Clippers had a big lead. Nets fought back, came back. Did they take the lead? I can't remember.
I think they did take the lead momentarily. Yeah, I think they led by one in the final couple minutes. Yeah,
and then the Clippers. And it was another close finish. So a good Sunday for both of us.
Yeah, that was fun. I think then I was reading all the reviews of the Oscars, like, it was boring, this, and everybody, all the same guys won, all the favorites won. So I'm like, yeah, I think I made the right choice that night. So that worked out.
Wait, I can't remember on your Oscar show, did you all picked Three Billboards, or I can't remember.
No,
I don't think any
of us picked Three Billboards because we just didn't think the Oscars had a sense of humor. We just said, this is not going to happen. We don't know. We didn't know exactly what film was going to win, but we did make predictions. But we knew that one wasn't going to win, even though it was the favorite. Like, there's no way a movie this provocative and this funny is going to win. Like, they hate humor. They never award a humorous movie the Oscar. I mean, sometimes it happens. I think Tootsie won like 35 years ago, but very rare, very rare. So given the choice, if I could choose a funny movie or a less funny movie, I pick the less funny movie. That's the Ditkow way of evaluating this stuff. But just in general, I just think that, you know, you already had a lot of other awards going. I mean, Quicks actually had really good analysis of this. Generally, if you're seeing a movie pick up a bunch of awards early in the telecast, you get a good feeling that they're going to probably take the Oscar as well. And they did. I mean, The Shape of Water won for the best score, which I agree with 100%. I was remiss not bringing that up last week because I really thought that score was very good. Like, I thought that was really, really well done. Some movies just don't lend themselves to good, lush musical scores anyway. I mean, you really can't make Lady Bird a great score. I mean, it's a movie that took place in Sacramento. Like, I don't know. You're not going to get John Williams to score that, but... But, you know, Three Billboards had a really rustic country feel, so not likely you were going to get anything, you know, really, really major or major or orchestration for that. So, you know, sometimes the situation doesn't allow for a great great score. But nevertheless, I just thought that Shape of Water was great in that regard. It won Guillermo del Toro Best Director. I mean, that was easy. I mean, pretty much everyone called it. And then Shape of Water for the win. So, yeah, I mean, pretty predictable. But a lot of people are like, oh, it's an upset. Like, no, it's not. If you know anything about the Academy, you would know that this would win. I mean, you saw both movies. Did you feel strongly one way or the other?
I actually did not see either movie.
Oh, you didn't see?
I'll be honest. No, I did not. I didn't see... Now I really want to... I mean, after hearing your show, I really want to see Three Billboards. I don't know why. I just kind of, you know, I don't get out to the movies that often, unfortunately, and most of the time I just wait to see them on cable or whatever. But but now I really want to see that. And now I heard Lady Bird was really good too. I want to see that.
Yes,
and then,
good movie. I loved it a lot.
What was the movie Andy recommended? Molly's Game.
He loved
now
Molly's Game.
That.
Yeah, that was a great movie. He said so.
And I loved Get Out. There's a perfect example. That was a really good movie. I was amazed it even got nominated. I just did not think it had a shot to win. I thought it was excellent, though. I encourage you to see that, Dave. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, but, I really owe it to myself to get out there somewhere to see Get Out. Get Out. To see Get Out. But no, seriously, I you know, I'm kind of kicking myself because for the weekend, Amazon Prime had all those movies available for $2 a rental. $2.
Oh, wow.
To see each one. I went out of town that weekend. I went to San Diego. And I didn't know if it was going to extend beyond Sunday. It didn't. It was like $15. I'm like, golly. If I had planned that better, I would have probably been able to watch all the movies in one sitting, really. I wanted to, but I didn't need to because I only needed to see like three or four of them at that point. Could have seen I, Tonya, could have seen Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, all that like in one day for $2 a piece. Like that would have been great. So maybe I'll think that over next time, but I'll probably get around to them at some point. Like I'm kind of hoping there's still some theater somewhere. Like, I don't just want to see it at the theater. That'd be great. Like just find maybe a second run theater and watch it and all that business. Anyway, I should have answered your question. So I predicted Shape of Water to win, even though I was reluctant. I really didn't think it deserved it, but all right, you know, it's probably... I had to think like the Academy, so I did pick that. I think Andy picked it too, and I believe Quickies... I don't think anybody went for the long shot with Get Out, and nobody went for The Post, even though we thought that would be an interesting play, but... I think the thing with The Post is that it's such a blatant attempt to get an Oscar. Like it's so protracted, it's so telegraphed. Like I don't think anyone was really buying it, so it didn't come anywhere close. The odds said that they were 250-1 odds to win anyway. So theoretically it would have had a shot, but I just think the movie was made 20 years too late. 25 years too late. It should have been made in the 80s, but Making it now, it's, I mean, I get they were trying to compare it to now, but I don't know. It didn't really interest me. But yeah, so I think we've predicted Shape of Water in summary, even though we all, like, disagree with it. Like, Andy wanted Molly's Game. I think Quickies wanted either Darkest Hour. No, I think it was Itanya. He wanted that to make a run. And we both, all three of us, I mean, the two of them, well, Andy actually was the only one that actually saw Get Out, so I gotta get out and see it, too. Anyway, enough of that. Sorry.
A little off topic. Sorry, good tangent, though.
Yeah. where were we at? We were talking about underperforming teams.
We were talking about going to games on Sunday, and that's how we got into the Oscars.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we made the right choice, though, seriously. Like, I think that was fun. And we'll see about next Sunday, because that's Selection Sunday for the NCAA. We will see. And take it from there. The tournament should be fun. I was watching some action over the last couple days. Maybe we'll talk about that in our next show. But yeah, good stuff. So the other underperforming team I wanted to get to was Oklahoma City. And I think a lot of people are still believers, but I think it's... You know, there's a lot of analysis that's been made about the Thunder, but I think it's as simple as just too many cooks in the kitchen. How many times do we see that? We see two, three big names on a team. Maybe one is a little over the hill, the other one is in their prime, and the other one's somewhere in the middle. But we have seen this many times. Like, we saw this go all the way back. I remember in 1999, they tried to do that with the Rockets. You had Charles Barkley, you had Scottie Pippen, and you had Hakeem Olajuwon. Olajuwon was completely beat up by then. He was barely able to move. Barkley was fat and overweight. Well, he was always fat and overweight, but he was super fat and overweight and not as good. Pippen was the one that probably still had some left in the tank, but it didn't work. It did not work. It seemed like it would work. On paper, it looked great. Didn't work. You had it with the Lakers when you had Malone and Peyton. Both of them were on the twilight of their career, Shaq and Kobe. It kind of worked, and then they got to the finals, and then it blew up. Then you had it again. Was there an example from the previous decade? Let me think. Well, the super team with LeBron, but that doesn't qualify because I don't know if that's quite there. Well, it did work with the Celtics 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. You know them well. Pierce, Garnett, and Ray Allen. You know, that's a great trio. Yep. And they got it done. So that was actually one that worked. But it doesn't always work. In fact, more times it doesn't work than it does work. And so the Thunder are the latest example of that. And I'm looking at them right now. Look, I'm watching the game. You're watching it too, I'm sure. And honestly, the bottom line here is it's Russell Westbrook's team. I think the other two guys are really good players, but I think they're such strong players. No, not that strong isn't the word, but they're such dominant players that they need to be the leader of their team. I think Georgia would be put into that particular situation. Definitely Carmelo, because he loves to have his shots. I just don't know if it's a fit. I think they can make the playoffs fine, but it does make me think back to all these other attempts at getting three superstars in the team, just cobbling them together and just expecting them to play. And I am not sure if the chemistry is there this time around. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, getting back to the big three, I think you need big three to win. I mean, I'm trying to think of a team. Well, maybe the Spurs didn't have a big three. I'll have to go back and look at all their championships at certain points. But I think you need a big three to win. And I think the problem with Oklahoma City is that Carmelo Anthony doesn't fall into that category anymore.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
His field goal percentage, he's shooting just above 40% from the floor, which is horrendous. His, even his free throw shooting is way off right now. He is really a shell of himself right now. And I think looking back, you know, that trade was probably a mistake. I mean, obviously getting George, you know, was the right move. I mean, just he does everything. I believe he's leading the league in steals right now.
And
he's such a good defensive player and still a really solid offensive weapon. But I think it's if there's a third in the big three, it might be Steven Adams at this point. So I don't know. I mean, I think they're an interesting team. I think they're, you know, again, if they're in the Eastern Conference, they're really solid, and they're in good position for the playoffs. But in the West, I just it's going to be tough. I mean, it's just going to be so competitive. But just looking at the matchups right now, the season ends today. They are the seventh seed, and obviously, like what I pointed out, is 2.5 games separating 3 and 8. But the seventh seed, they would play Golden State in the first round. I mean, it's just an impossible scenario, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they can.
Well, they
I don't
have
know.
Played well against them, though. There? At least the early part of the season, they were. I mean, they killed them the first time I saw them meet up this year. But you're right. It's like over 7 games. Is that going to happen? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's the biggest problem. It's just that it's really mellow.
And I think they were doing great. They got the trade for Paul George. That was awesome. And I think they just pushed the tape. They pushed the chips a little too far. And they could have gotten another guy that wasn't quite as big a name. That probably would have had as much production and probably more, especially on the defensive end. They didn't have to go quite that big a name. Like, they could have made a trade for, I don't know, let's see. I got to look at what he's getting paid this year. That's a big part of it. Like, I wanted to see, like, what his salary was, and then I could figure out, like, what a comparable player could be. So, let me get that information. But, yeah, what are some guys they could have traded for as opposed to Carmelo? Like, what would have been a better outcome for Oklahoma City? Now, they traded who? Like, trying to think who they traded for
the, Enes Kanter and Doug McDermott, and there were some draft picks that moved around in that too. But it was, you know, Dave, it was a really late trade. I mean, it was September, late September when they traded them, so it wasn't like, teams were fully more or less set on their rosters at that point, so weren't a lot of players moving around. So, but honestly, I think they would have been better off just standing pat. I mean, just building up the depth with Kanter. I mean, Kanter's had a nice little season with the Knicks, and they're really happy with this game.
That's a great call.
Of course, the Knicks traded McDermott, I would have liked to seen them with what they would have done without him. You know,
yeah. I think it's true, though. Kanter has been pretty solid, right? Like, he could probably get you 10 to 12 points a game. I don't see why they needed to go that far. I remember how late that trade was. I'm like, uh-oh. It might be going a little too... I mean, I guess it's easy for me to say that now, but you need to think people who are familiar with Carmelo are like, what does he have left? I think that was an obvious question coming from the Knicks fan base. So, and the answer turns out to be not much. So, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny. The Knicks did all right on that trade, you know, when you think about it. They shed that salary. I mean, the Knicks still have, you know, that awful Noah salary, which might be one of the worst in basketball right now. But you know, I guess how many years does Carmelo have left? Does he have one more year after this?
It says there is an early termination option I see here. But other than so... There isn't. I don't know who gets that option. I'm guessing the Thunder could. So, on the books, he could be due for $27 million next year. But this early termination option may give the Thunder a get out of jail free card. That's interesting. That wouldn't. Maybe they'll utilize that option. Yeah. Yeah. I got to do one more. Can we do the all bad salary team? The all overpaid team. I want to do that. Like that. That'd be really awesome. Like, who are the most overpaid guys in the NBA? I just mean this year, too. Like, I don't mean... Because it would take too long to protract into, like, 5 years down the line. But who would be the starting five of the all-overpaid team?
Oh, man. I need to do a little research. Do you have some numbers up in
what
front of you?
What I'm going to do... I'm going to get the top NBA salaries. And then from that list, I'll get the ones who aren't that good.
Well, Mike Conley is the first name that I'm looking at right now. Mike Conley making $28.5 million.
Oh, that's good. He's a starting point guard.
He is signed for he he signed for 4 more years as an early termination option in 2021.
All right, so
but he's going to get 28.5. He hasn't played a single game this year.
Oh, that's a good. So he is getting he's the starting point guard easily. Yeah, that's great. And Griffin, power forward, making $29 million this year and going up too. That's just the beginning. So he's the easy all first ballot, all selection power forward for the all overpaid team.
Are we looking for all? I mean, because I'm looking for like guys who are just busts. I mean, I mean, he's overpaid, but like
he's good. He's good. You're right. That's not fair. I should take him off that list. He's not a bust.
I mean, I'm looking like Noah. Noah's number 54. He's making $17.7 million. He's not even playing. Another one. Again, you know, I'm looking at guys who aren't even playing. I mean, we could quibble about like a Drew Holiday making $25 million, but he's still a productive player. Whether he's worth $25 million, I doubt it. But wow, Chris Bosh has 2 more years left on his Miami contract.
I guess I'm not that surprised, but that's rough. That's rough for Miami. Man, they're in salary cap hell for like 3 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't realize is Miami has the worst salary cap number for next year, and they have no draft picks. They've traded everything away. I think a lot of it was in the Dragic trade, but it's like two or more years where they've given up their first rounders in the next, you know, 4 seasons. So we'll see. I mean, they could be in bad shape in another few years. I think when LeBron left, they just went crazy and they didn't know what to do with the money. And man, they just spent like drunken sailors with, you know, Kelly Olynyk and so forth. But back to the all overpaid team. Let's get this going.
Well, how does Nick Batum grab you over in Charlotte?
Yeah, that's a good one. There's a good example.
There's a
shooting
good
player, but yeah.
No, he's totally not worth numbers. $22 million. Oh my gosh! All right, so let's see. So we got how many? We have up to 3. We got the center with Noah. We have the point guard with Conley and Batum. So we need 2 forwards. Yeah. All right, let's see. Is Alan Crabb tall enough to be a forward? Because it says he's shooting guard, but
you could put Batum at the forward. You put Crabb in the backcourt with
We'll make him the 6th man. I'll tell you why. Luol Deng, $17.1 million, and he ain't anywhere on the planet right now. You don't even see him, so that's easy. You mentioned Evan Turner too. That's a good one. So there you go.
Yeah, his numbers are insane. Portland lost their damn minds in that summer of 2016. I mean, they signed him and Alan Crabb. They might have signed someone else. I forget, but they just went mad in that free agent market. And they were able to get rid of Crabb, but Evan Turner remains at that bananas contract.
Horrible. Now, let me get the stats on this guy. I'm going to read him to you. Let's see if he's worthy. He's making $14.9 million this year. That's not that bad, actually. No, I'm not going to use him. 11.8 points per game, 6 rebounds. I speak of Thaddeus Young. Nah, he's all right. I'll leave him alone. So we gotta get a power forward for the all overpaid team. Let's see.
Oh, I got one.
Oh, you got one?
Ian Mahinami from Washington. He is a bust. And again, another guy signed in that 2016 off season.
Oh, I gotta look this up. Ian Mahinami. Let's see.
Yeah.
Otto Porter is pretty overpaid, but I guess he's at least he's good.
No, he's good.
Yeah, he's good. I won't put him in there. Ian M. I can't find him.
A-H-I-N-I-M-I. Mahinami.
Let's see. I'm trying to find his. Oh, there we go.
He's having
16.6. Wow.
16.6.
He should be making 3.
He's averaging 4.6 points a game, and four rebounds a game. I mean, this is, you know, this is obviously 15 minutes a game, but the fact that he can't get more minutes on that team, you know, that's his problem.
Yeah.
That's a horrible contract.
Oh, that's horrendous. Yeah, okay, so we got our power forward. So here's a starting five. We have Mahimini. We have Noah. We've got the backcourt's awesome. We have Mike Conley and Nick Batum in the backcourt.
Yeah.
Better watch out, Dame. We got a backcourt of Batum and Conley. Oh, that's great. That's great. And who were we missing somebody?
Some of these names just jump out at you. Like, when did Evan Fournier is he's a decent player. He's making $17 million. Damn.
Yeah, this
and
is...
he signed until 2022 or 2021.
Where did these guys get the idea that they had to spend money? There's no actual salary floor, is there?
I don't know
what they were thinking.
Crazy.
What were they thinking? What's wrong with just waiting and like, okay, let's just have some cap room for a year, and then when LeBron clears out again, which he will every 3 years.
They're thinking that the money was just going to go up and up and up when after the NBA signed that new contract, the league was flush with cash, and they figured, okay, well, we're going to have more next year. And the cap didn't go up.
That's such a strange... That's university what like thinking, because it's like, well, we get the stipend, and they're under the impression that they have to spend it because we're going to get another stipend. But that's making a huge presumption. Yeah, and everybody, you know, and this is just one where the entire league blew it. Nobody avoided this. Nobody. Every team has at least one of these bad contracts. They all sucked that year in the offseason. It's just rough. Anyway.
You know, it's funny. Like last year, this is interesting, just about the salary cap, because, you know, the salary cap is it's a percentage of the league earnings. And so they calculate it every year after the playoffs, because they have to figure out, okay, how many games, how many tickets do we sell, and so forth. And last year, because you had Golden State and Cleveland basically sweeping teams, the revenue went down because you had fewer games. Right. So as a result, it hurts the salary cap. It hurt the players because you had a slightly shorter playoffs.
Didn't really would have an effect like that. I guess it does, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not huge, but it's
significant.
It's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Now I'm watching Oklahoma City. No, they're done. They're done. They're down by 11 with 92 seconds to go.
Under 2 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, we're under 2 minutes. Down by double digits. That's probably not going to happen. So, I mean, they were in the game for a little bit, but I think their woes will continue. Now, let me give it to you this way. Gun to your head. Do you see the Thunder in the NBA playoffs this year?
I don't think they'll fall out. I mean... Let's see, they're a game and a half up on the Clippers, who are the ninth-seeded team.
It's interesting, though.
I don't know, man.
Utah Jazz breathing down their necks. They got the Clippers breathing down
Utah
their necks, too.
The Clippers have been great.
Yep. Tonight, they're going to play the Pelicans. I like this matchup a lot. I mean, I guess if I really wanted to, I could just run out of here and go to the game. maybe I won't. Instead, let's get some predictions. What do you think will happen here? I mean, the Clips are certainly in line to end that 8-game winning streak for the Pelicans. What do you think happens in this one?
I pick the Clippers. What is the spread in that game? Not that that.
Oh, that's a great question. It wasn't big though. Let me go look it up. One sec.
I'm just looking at. I want to look at. You got me thinking about Oklahoma City. Can they miss the playoffs? Oklahoma City plays the fourth toughest schedule. In 17 remaining games.
Ooh.
They play they have the Rockets twice, they have the Warriors, they have the Raptors, Celtics, and Trailblazers all left on their schedule. And of the bad teams, they got Memphis, the Suns, Hawks, and Kings. Maybe they don't. You know, Dave, maybe that might be hard.
Yeah. It's just because the other teams are on such a roll right now, too. And I honestly think that Utah is a genuinely good team. Like, it's a team, too.
They are.
It's not, like, two guys. It's, like, a bunch of guys that are playing really well. And you can name, like, six players. And I'll, you know, Gobert, Rubio. Who's the guy that you got? Oh, Jay Crowder, right? And then Joe Ingles. That's, I think I'm up to four.
Donovan Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, Mitchell. Yeah. That's five. So, yeah, we got, that's a pretty solid team. Like, I think that's a team that really could go places. So, you know, Clippers.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And now the Nuggets are going to be the real X factor here because I think that's a talented team too, but their defense stinks. So, that might be the one that keeps one of the other two from getting in. But, I mean, with all that on the table, I mean, I think the Thunder are going to have to play some of these teams, no less. So, tough sledding for them.
Yeah, definitely. That is a really good point. I didn't realize how perilous it was down the stretch. I just want to see. I'm just going to look up their schedule.
Oh, I forgot to give you the point spread. Sorry. So the Clippers are a 2-point favorite tonight at home against New Orleans.
Huh. Yeah, that seems all right. I would pick the Clippers, but, you know, I wouldn't feel too confident about it. Oklahoma City, they play the Rockets tonight. They're losing. They got next game's Phoenix, San Antonio, Sacramento, Atlanta, Clippers, Raptors at Celtics, Miami, home Portland at San Antonio, home Denver, at the Pelicans, home Warriors. Man, it's a tough schedule, Dave. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They got a lot of tough games there, especially on the road against the Eastern Conference. Seems like the Celtics and Raptors. That's not going to be easy. Even a team like, you know, even a game like at San Antonio, and San Antonio hasn't been, they've been sinking like a stone, but that's not going to be easy. That is going to be a difficult game. And then they got at the Pelicans. Man, I don't know.
It's tough. Time will tell. I mean, some of these teams can cool off, but that's asking a lot for the Thunder, who really have been up and down this year. Mostly, and lately it's just been down. Not much up lately. But it just speaks to how well these other teams are playing around them too. The Nuggets, by the way, are having a very tough night. They are currently down to the Dallas Mavericks, 104-99. The game ain't over yet, though. There's still a good 6 minutes, 41 seconds to go. After this game tonight, the Nuggets will return home, and they will play the Cleveland Cavaliers. I think that will be a fun game. I think that will be a really interesting litmus test for the Cavs to see how they can handle a big, tough-to-win road atmosphere in high altitude, no less. That'll be a really, really good challenge for Cleveland. And it's a good challenge for Denver, too, because they're going to come in with a team that has LeBron James and an improved roster, and we'll see how it goes. So, now, I think the Nuggets can win tonight anyway. They are only down by 7. There's still a lot of time. But if you look ahead a bit to tomorrow, what do you see? How good? I mean, how much of a chance would you give the Nuggets to win against Cleveland?
Wait, I'm sorry. Where is that game? Is that a home game?
Yeah, home game for the Nuggets. Yeah, tomorrow.
Oh, I think they have a solid chance.
I do too.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what the spread is in that. Not that I'm going to bet, but it always gives me a sense if my instincts are right. But I would feel pretty strongly that Denver wins that. It's a tough atmosphere to play at. I don't know how good Denver, you know, if they have a strong home court advantage. Cleveland's giving up a lot of points again.
Yep.
I mean, that they looked nice. They beat the Celtics, they beat the Thunder after the big trades they pulled off. And then since then, they've been kind of junky, you know, lately. I mean, they beat Detroit last night, as you talked about earlier. But they're back to giving up like 120, 130 points a game again.
Yeah, it's I think we both were on top of that, though.
By 10.
Mavericks up by 10? Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty nuts.
So much for the tank at Bond, right, Dave?
I mean,
this is a team where the owner said we should probably tank, and you know they're taking it to. I mean, granted, it's at home, but they're taking it to a playoff team right now.
Yeah.
On a fundamental level, I just don't know how. How do you tell? You know, these guys are so competitive that you're gonna tell them not to win. Like, what do you do? What is tank at Bond? What is that?
No, I
the only thing I can think of is your coach. You play a shorter bench. You play like an 8-man rotation or something like that. 9 players, and then like, even if you're a coach, what do you? You know, Rick Carlisle wants to lose these games. No,
I'm with you. Carlisle's a good coach. So
you tell Dirk like we got to lose so that we can get Doncic next year. I mean, he's gonna like punch you in the face.
Yeah, it is a tough ask, huh? Yeah, that is true. Once the games get going, I think that the instincts to win will always be in the best players. So it'll definitely happen from time to time. So I don't know. I don't have an answer to that either. I'm not really sure what you do to position a tank. I don't know. I mean, the best I can come up with is the Suns, but we both established it. They just suck. I don't think there was any deliberate attempt to lose. They're just bad. They just can't play.
Yeah. Yep. You're right.
I think.
Absolutely right.
We'll see. Well, anyway, that's what I've been seeing lately. That's really like the one constant with all those teams. Like the Hawks will come up and they'll give a team a tough game, like we saw tonight. The Mavericks will go up and give the team a tough time, as we're seeing tonight. Also, we can see other teams at the bottom having occasional moments in the sun. The Knicks can even do it. The Kings occasionally win. Who'd they take to overtime the other day? They took some team to overtime. I can't remember who. Kings were really, they tied 99-99. They went to overtime. I don't know. But, wait, what am I looking at? Oh, sorry. This is not the standings. Oops. So, but yeah, there's a lot of, there are a number of teams that, yeah, they got a bad record, but sometimes they can be hot for a night. And Orlando's in there too. The Orlando crushed the Lakers once. The Nets, we saw them against the Clippers on Sunday. If we go to the other conference, we can look at, I guess that's probably, yeah, I guess the Lakers technically are one of those teams. So the Lakers have been playing great. So Phoenix is the only team that is consistently bad. And oh my goodness, I forgot about Memphis. Did you see that they are? I just saw this. They are on a 14-game losing streak. 14 games in a row. Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah, pretty awful.
Yeah.
They had to hold out for a first for Tyreek.
Yeah, good one. Like, good one,
I'm
Memphis.
Still thinking my head up to that. we'll re-sign him.
Yeah, good. Yeah, crazy. You do that. Absolutely. You do that, Grizzlies. Yeah. Hope that works out for you.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Atlanta Hawks, you're like, look, we're not tanking. Our best player is Kent Bazemore. This is who we are, you know?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's going to be 14 games in a row losing. I hadn't seen that in a while. I think somebody may have lost like 19 in a row. Was it Washington a long time ago? Like, not that long ago, like 8 years ago, I think. It wasn't that long ago. But
yeah,
somebody lost a bunch of games in a row, I remember. And that's almost as good as like a 33-game winning streak. A losing streak. Oh, that's Philadelphia, I think, that had that crazy losing streak. Yeah, that was only
Yeah,
it's a couple years ago, yeah. So
seems like a long time ago now.
It felt like, yeah, it does. It does feel like longer ago. They are good. And they're still flawed, too, but they are a competitive team. They definitely have been playing good ball this year. All right, so let's just swiftly address the G League intentions. I think the NBA has been putting this in the works for quite some time, like 5 years in the making, trying to make the G League a de facto minor league. They've been expanding it. I think the very easy tell was when they renamed all the teams closer to the actual NBA teams. Like, because they had different names. And then they started making them closer, more closely named to the actual NBA team that owned them. So the Lakers became the South Bay Lakers. And the Spurs became the whatever Spurs. And the, 76ers became the 87ers, and so stuff like that. Like they've been trying to rename the teams to more closely associate them with their NBA franchise. So that seems like an overture. And the announcements this week that they're trying to position this as a true developmental league, an alternative to college for those coming out of high school, and a way to pay players salaries to to start out and be a pro. I think it's awesome. I think it's great. And in so doing, the idea is to eliminate the one-and-done rule of college. So I do not remember if there was... I did read the article. It wasn't very long. I found it on Bleacher Report. And I think this is all great. I think this is all great. I don't know if they're going to institute an actual requirement for college to that you have to play 2 or 3 years now. I would endorse that. I think that's fine. You get out of high school and you go to the NBA, you get out of high school, you go to the G League, or you get out of high school, but you have to play 2 years in college basketball. I think all those are good options, and having the choice is awesome. I think it kind of evens out a lot of weird scenarios right now with basketball. So I gather you're a fan of this new movement as well.
I think getting rid of the one and done is absolutely the right thing. I mean, I don't agree that there should be a college requirement for these guys to play in the NBA. I don't know why there ever was one, but baseball, there's no such thing. Hockey, there's no such thing. Basketball, it should go the same way. And it sounds like that's what Adam Silver, rather, is going to do. As far as the G League and, you know, the efforts to make it, more robust option for young players, I think it's so smart because, you know, I just think he's and Silver has been kind of playing this for a while now, right? I mean, he got the sponsorship, he's kind of built up the league, gotten more teams involved, and there's still like 3 or 4 teams that do not have an affiliate, but I expect that will change. But I just think it's so wise because you see players who don't want to go to college playing overseas, and I'm not talking about the Ball brothers, but like, although I guess you could put them in that category too, but like Emmanuel Mudiay, for example, is one guy, and I remember Brandon Jennings played overseas instead of going to college. And so there are guys who may not quite be NBA ready. I don't know what Mudiay might have been drafted in first round coming out of high school if the one and done weren't a thing. But you know, I think it just provides another option for these guys, and it gives them a chance to learn. In a system run by, you know, by a specific organization and also get paid, which, you know, college players do not get paid as far as we know. Maybe DeAndre Ayton does, but I don't know. Maybe a lot of these guys do. I don't know. But that's another story. But I think in general, I just think it's the wise thing to do. And I feel like the one and done was always like a little give back by the NBA to college basketball, because it's like, well, you guys, you know, we basically have a minor league system for athletes. We don't put any investment into it, and there's, you know, unlike baseball, where there's like subsidies that happen. I mean, I don't exactly know how that works, but they certainly pay their draft picks, so the organizations pay their players who have contracts with, you know, like, for example, the Dodgers or the Red Sox or the Yankees. But I just think it's just a smarter way to go, and it gives, it also, the other thing about that's great about it is it gives you a chance to, you can send guys down, guys who are at the end of the bench who may not be playing as much, and you can send him down to the G League affiliate and get him more playing time and just keep their skills sharper. Maybe then they'd be if they're the 15th guy on the roster and they're not seeing any minutes. So I just think it makes too much sense, Dave. And I'm a big fan of Silver. I think he's the best executive in American sports right now. And I can't wait to see where he takes it. I get a little cynical when he renames it the G League for Gatorade, but you know, there's some wisdom in that too. It's just like, you know, he's just trying to position it as a another entity, and that he's just trying to make money off of it, which is great. And just, I think he'll make it work, and I'm interested to see where it goes and how this thing evolves.
It is a really exciting time in the NBA, and we're seeing the growth certainly, and they're really trying to expand and make the game better for everybody, and I like it. I like where this is going. I think, because otherwise, what are you gonna do with all those teams? Like, it's just there for underperforming players. Like, I think this is a nice entry level for. And it fills a void that I feel like has been growing in the last 10 years. So I think it's great. I have no concern for what the impact on college basketball is. As you can see, the NCAA cannot get out of its own way with some of these programs. So I certainly have no sympathy for them. And so it's pretty smart, I think. So we'll leave it at that. Chris, been a lot of fun. Have a great week. And enjoy.
You too.
Enjoy the movies too. I too will try to catch up with some of them. I'll get into the basketball and college too. Any predictions for college basketball? Maybe we should do this next week. But yeah, I mean, if you could pick a couple teams to win the tournament, it's tough this year. It's so even. But who would you select?
Yeah, I honestly haven't seen enough. The team that's really starting to scare me right now is Duke, just because they have so much talent and they look like they're gelling at the right time. And, they're a weird team. They look like they could, I haven't seen enough, but they look like a Final Four team to me, which, you know, it's not going out on a limb, but, I love watching UVA too. I'm an ACC guy, so I'll get to watch those teams. I don't watch as much, I haven't watched a ton of Big Ten or Big 12 games, so, or even Pac-12 for that matter. So I don't have a lot of knowledge going in, unfortunately. But how about you? Who's looking good to you?
Oh man, I don't. This is tough because you think it's one team and then they give up a game, and then you think it's another team and they give up a game. So I don't know. Well, let me throw a couple at you. Let's see. Let's see. We'll take out Duke because I think they're average. They're a little more average than normal. That's not a bad team though. North Carolina, easy dismissal. I always think Kentucky's in the wings, but they're really not that good this year, so no.
Yeah.
Kansas might have a chance. West Virginia might have a chance. I don't know. I'm going to go with Michigan State right now because I think they're the team that can actually handle big situations. Their defense has been good. I mean, they don't have any superstars on the team. But you can't count out Izzo in March. And their team is pretty good. So I'm going to go Michigan State as one of the teams. The other team, let's see. I mean, I like Arizona State, but that's just the bias on my part. I think they're fun, but I don't think they're going to make a national championship run. That's kind of silly. But I do like them. I think Trey Holder is awesome. By the way, Oklahoma, forget it. I'm going to tell you right now, they're going to get upset early. They're not making it very far at all. They're not going anywhere. That team is all Trey Young. Once you shut them down, the team's done.
It's amazing. They've gone into the tank, and they've really just fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we had Michigan State. What's the other one?
What about Arizona? Like, what do you think about Arizona?
Well, they're really talented. I think the problem is Sean Miller.
Yeah, how big a distraction is that going to be?
Well,
and like, I assume you saw his press conference.
The thing about it is this. Sean Miller may actually have a case. I don't think... They may have been erroneous in reporting on ESPN's part. I'm just going to have to wait and see.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. So, I tend to take their side until the facts prove otherwise, because ESPN is notorious for erroneous reporting and a lot of storyline driving like that. I think that's just terrible. And they should get their pants sued if that is in fact the case, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, but I think on the court, I think they're a good team, but I just think that Sean Miller, even beyond this, like, he's not a good tournament coach. You know, he's never been to a Final Four with Arizona, not once.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like every year they have, like, at least one five-star player.
And every...
I mean, you look at the caliber of players. I mean, all his one and done. So the guys who have come and gone. I mean, man, he's had a lot of really good players. How many lottery picks has he had?
Lottery picks. Oh, numerous, right? Like, I imagine one every year or one every 2 years.
At least one a year.
Yeah.
It's
pretty. It's pretty disappointing now that you really put that.
I had no idea he hadn't made a Final Four. Really, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, feel free to look that up. I'll look it up as well. But I mean, I see time after time they go to the Elite Eight or they go to the Sweet 16, and somebody else beats them. And you know, when it happens that frequently, you wonder if it's a. You kind of cease to think it's a coincidence. So I can't trust that team. I just can't. I can't trust them until they get there. And they'll get there probably at some point, but I don't think it's this year. So, I guess Kansas might be the one because they've got the coach Bill Self has done it before. Getting to Final Four seems to not be a problem for him. You know, Dick Vitale is really talking up the SEC. He thinks that they're the second best conference in college basketball. Do you buy that?
I don't know enough about it.
I don't know enough about it either. I'm like, who is he talking about? Like, Kentucky's having a bad year for them. Alabama's
Auburn's
good.
Auburn's really good, right?
What's that?
Didn't Auburn win the SEC?
Oh, yeah, Auburn is good. That's true. That is good. But I think people's... Yeah, all right. So maybe he's talking about Auburn then. That's true. They are pretty good. So maybe Auburn. I don't know enough about them, though. I've never really seen many games of theirs.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you any amount.
Yeah. So maybe.
I just haven't watched any college basketball other than, like, some ACC games here and there. And occasionally I'll turn on a Big 12 game, but I just have not watched a ton.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll leave it at that for the moment. We'll have more. We'll have some bigger experts that can better detail some of these teams next week. So I look forward to hearing from them, too. And we'll be back, too, for our NBA report next week. So next week's going to be action-packed. Chris, it should be a good time. And once again, enjoy your week. Enjoy the movies and enjoy the basketball. So we'll reconnect at some point soon in the very near future.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. Have a good one.
Awesome. You, too. Take care.
All right. Take care. That's Chris in Georgia. That's our show. And we say goodnight. Have a good one, everybody. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the games. And that's all. Big week next week. We'll see you next time.